Sanctuary by William Faulkner. 1. From beyond the screen of bushes which surrounded the spring, Popeye watched the man drinking. A faint path led from the road to the spring. Popeye watched the man, a tall, thin man, hatless, in worn gray flannel trousers and carrying a tweed coat over his arm, emerge from the path and kneel to drink from the spring. The spring welled up at the root of a beech tree and flowed away upon a bottom of whorled and waved sand. It was surrounded by a thick growth of cane and briar, of cypress and gum in which broken sunlight lay sourceless. Somewhere, hidden and secret yet nearby, a bird sang three notes and ceased. In the spring, the drinking man leaned his face to the broken and myriad reflection of his own drinking. When he rose up, he saw among them the shattered reflection of Popeye's straw hat, though he had heard no sound. He saw, facing him across the spring, a man of undersize, his hands in his coat pockets, a cigarette slanted from his chin. His suit was black with a tight, high-waisted coat. His trousers were rolled once and caked with mud above mud-caked shoes. His face had a queer, bloodless color, as though seen by electric light. Against the sunny silence, in his slanted straw hat and his slightly akimbo arms, he had that vicious, depthless quality of stamped tin. Behind him, the bird sang again, three bars in monotonous repetition, a sound meaningless and profound out of a susperant and peaceful following silence which seemed to isolate the spot, and out of which a moment later came the sound of an automobile passing along a road and dying away. The drinking man knelt beside the spring.
"You've got a pistol in that pocket, I suppose," he said.
Across the spring, Popeye appeared to contemplate him with two knobs of soft black rubber.
"I'm asking you," Popeye said. "What's that in your pocket?"
The other man's coat was still across his arm. He lifted his other hand toward the coat, out of one pocket of which protruded a crushed felt hat, from the other, a book.
"Which pocket?" he said.
"Don't show me," Popeye said. "Tell me."
The other man stopped his hand.
"It's a book."
"What book?" Popeye said.
"Just a book. The kind that people read. Some people do."
"Do you read books?" Popeye said.
The other man's hand was frozen above the coat. Across the spring, they looked at one another. The cigarette wreathed its faint plume across Popeye's face. One side of his face squinted against the smoke like a mask carved into two simultaneous expressions. From his hip pocket, Popeye took a soiled handkerchief and spread it upon his heels. Then he squatted, facing the man across the spring. That was about 4 o'clock on an afternoon in May. They squatted so, facing one another across the spring, for 2 hours. Now and then the bird sang back in the swamp as though it were worked by a clock. Twice more invisible automobiles passed along the high road and died away. Again the bird sang.
"And of course you don't know the name of it," the man across the spring said. "I don't suppose you'd know a bird at all without it was singing in a cage in a hotel lounge or cost $4 on a plate."
Popeye said nothing. He squatted in his tight black suit, his right-hand coat pocket sagging compactly against his flank, twisting and pinching cigarettes in his little doll-like hands, spitting into the spring. His skin had a dead, dark pallor. His nose was faintly aquiline, and he had no chin at all. His face just went away, like the face of a wax doll set too near a hot fire and forgotten. Across his vest ran a platinum chain like a spider web.
"Look here," the other man said. "My name is Horace Benbow. I'm a lawyer in Kinston. I used to live in Jefferson yonder. I'm on my way there now. Anybody in this county can tell you I am harmless. If it's whiskey, I don't care how much y'all make or sell or buy. I just stopped here for a drink of water. All I want to do is to get to town, to Jefferson.
Popeye's eyes looked like rubber knobs, like they'd give to the touch and then recover with the world smudge of the thumb on them.
I want to reach Jefferson before dark, Benbow said. You can't keep me here like this.
Without removing the cigarette, Popeye spat past it into the spring.
You can't stop me like this, Benbow said. Suppose I break and run.
Popeye put his eyes on Benbow like rubber.
Do you want to run?
No, Benbow said.
Popeye removed his eyes.
Well, don't then.
Benbow heard the bird again, trying to recall the local name for it. On the invisible high road, another car passed, died away. Between them and the sound of it, the sun was almost gone. From his trousers pocket, Popeye took a dollar watch and looked at it and put it back in his pocket, loose like a coin. Where the path from the spring joined the sandy byroad, a tree had been recently felled, blocking the road. They climbed over the tree and went on, the high road now behind them. In the sand were two shallow parallel depressions, but no mark of hoof. Where the branch from the spring seeped across it, Benbow saw the prints of automobile tires. Ahead of him, Popeye walked, his tight suit and stiff hat all angles, like a modernist lampstand. The sand ceased. The road rose, curving out of the jungle. It was almost dark. Popeye looked briefly over his shoulder.
Step out, Jack, he said.
Why didn't we cut straight across up the hill? Benbow said.
Through all them trees, Popeye said.
His hat jerked in a dull, vicious gleam in the twilight as he looked down the hill where the jungle already lay like a lake of ink.
Jesus Christ!
It was almost dark. Popeye's gait had slowed. He walked now beside Benbow, and Benbow could see the continuous jerking of the hat from side to side as Popeye looked about with a sort of vicious cringing. The hat just reached Benbow's chin. Then, something, a shadow shaped with speed, stooped at them and on, leaving a rush of air upon their very faces, on a soundless feathering of taut wings, and Benbow felt Popeye's whole body spring against him and his hand clawing at his coat.
It's just an owl, Benbow said. It's nothing but an owl.
Then he said, they call that Carolina wren a fishing bird. That's what it is, what I couldn't think of back there. With Popeye crouching against him, clawing at his pocket and hissing through his teeth like a cat.
He smells black, Benbow thought. He smells like that black stuff that ran out of Bovary's mouth and down upon her bridal veil when they raised her head.
A moment later, above a black, jagged mass of trees, the house lifted its stark, square bulk against the failing sky. The house was a gutted ruin rising gaunt and stark out of a grove of unpruned cedar trees. It was a landmark known as the Old Frenchman Place, built before the Civil War. A plantation house set in the middle of a tract of land, of cotton fields and gardens and lawns long since gone back to jungle, which the people of the neighborhood had been pulling down piecemeal for firewood for 50 years, or digging with secret and sporadic optimism for the gold which the builder was reputed to have buried somewhere about the place when Grant came through the country on his Vicksburg campaign. 3 men were sitting in chairs on one end of the porch. In the depths of the open hall, a faint light showed. The hall went straight back through the house. Popeye mounted the steps, the 3 men looking at him and his companion.
Here's the professor, he said, without stopping.
He entered the house, the hall. He went on and crossed the back porch and turned and entered the room where the light was. It was the kitchen. A woman stood at the stove. She wore a faded calico dress.
About her naked ankles, a worn pair of man's brogans, unlaced, flapped when she moved. She looked back at Popeye, then to the stove again, where a pan of meat hissed. Popeye stood in the door. His hat was slanted across his face. He took a cigarette from his pocket without producing the pack, and pinched and fretted it, and put it into his mouth, and snapped a match on his thumbnail.
"There's a bird out front," he said.
The woman did not look around. She turned the meat. "Why tell me?" she said. "I don't serve Lee's customers."
"It's a professor," Popeye said.
The woman turned, an iron fork suspended in her hand. Behind the stove, in shadow, was a wooden box.
"A what?"
"Professor," Popeye said. "He's got a book with him."
"What's he doing here?"
"I don't know. I never thought to ask. Maybe to read the book."
"He came here?"
"I found him at the spring."
"Was he trying to find this house?"
"I don't know," Popeye said. "I never thought to ask."
The woman was still looking at him.
"I'll send him on to Jefferson on the truck," Popeye said. "He said he wants to go there."
"Why tell me about it?" the woman said.
"You cook. He'll want to eat."
"Yes," the woman said. She turned back to the stove. "I cook. I cook for crimps and spungs and phoebes.
Yes, I cook."
In the door, Popeye watched her, the cigarette curling across his face. His hands were in his pockets.
"You can quit. I take you back to Memphis Sunday. You can go to hustling again."
He watched her back.
"You're getting fat here, laying off in the country. I won't tell them on Manuel Street."
The woman turned, the fork in her hand.
"You bastard," she said.
"Show," Popeye said. "I won't tell him that Ruby Lamar is down in the country wearing a pair of Lee Goodwin's throwaway shoes, chopping her own firewood. No, I'll tell him Lee Goodwin is big rich."
"You bastard," the woman said. "You bastard."
"Show,"
Popeye said. Then he turned his head. There was a shuffling sound across the porch, then a man entered. He was stooped in overalls. He was barefoot. It was his bare feet which they had heard. He had a sunburned thatch of hair, matted and foul. He had pale, furious eyes, a short, soft beard like dirty gold in color.
"I be dog if he ain't a case now," he said.
"What do you want?" the woman said. The man in overalls didn't answer. In passing, he looked at Popeye with a glance at once secret and alert, as though he were ready to laugh at a joke, waiting for the time to laugh. He crossed the kitchen with a shambling, bear-like gait, and still with that air of alert and gleeful secrecy, though in plain sight of them, he removed a loose board in the floor and took out a gallon jug. Popeye watched him, his forefingers in his vest, the cigarette. He had smoked it down without once touching it with his hand, curling across his face. His expression was savage, perhaps baleful, contemplative, watching the man in overalls recross the floor with a kind of alert diffidence, the jug clumsily concealed below his flank. He was watching Popeye with that expression, alert and ready for mirth, until he left the room. Again they heard his bare feet on the porch.
"Show," Popeye said. "I won't tell him on Manuel Street that Ruby Lamar is cooking for a dummy and a phoebe, too."
"You bastard," the woman said. "You bastard."